And to introduce our speaker tonight, here's Mary Jean.
Hey guys, my name's Mary Jean. I'm an alcoholic. And welcome to Spring 2013. It's a fling. Let's get excited. This is a party, and we celebrate recovery. It's a big deal. And I do not like to stand behind this podium, but I am very proud to introduce our speaker tonight, Jody. I have known Jody almost 9 years now. He kind of wandered into my life one day, kind of just showed up through a whole series of circumstances that cannot be explained, but it was a gift, and I had the pleasure of watching Jody get sober, and I was talking about being excited, and Jody's excited about AA. I was talking with Perry earlier today about, I was looking forward to hearing his story, and I said, Jody's got a lot to share that a lot of people will relate to, but the best thing he's got to share is that he's excited about recovery, and he's been that way since the day I first met him. He's touched a lot of lives, mine's included. As I said, my name's Mary Jean, and I have a small Jean family, and Jody is a Jean. Jody Jean, I love you. I'm proud of you, and come tell us about the two kinds of love.
That was very sweet. Thanks, Mary Jean. I'm Jody McInnes. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict and an overeater, and I'm obsessed with women and money, and I can be a lot of other things if I don't do the work in this program. I got tears in my eyes when Mary Jean's talking, because she's one of the people that saved my life. And I remember saying to her, I don't know how I can ever repay you. And she said, you do what we did for you. That's all we ask. And that's why I'm here, because I'm grateful for my recovery. I'm grateful for my sobriety, and this place saved my life. And I'm grateful for that. My sobriety date is May 24th, 2004. And God willing, and the creek don't rise, that'll be 9 years in a few days. So I'm really thrilled about that. You're all clapping for yourselves. I mean, I was trying to think what to talk about, and you think about all these things, and but I was thinking about two of the most powerful words in the steps, other than certainly God of our understanding, or we, and then in the 12th step, tried. And this thing's too hard alone. If you're tired of the way you're living and you want a new way of life, you're going to have to accept the we part, and you're going to have to, it's tough. I know why you're booing. I think I thought the same things when I got here. You know, I was talking to Sam earlier about the dances we had here and the New Year's Eve parties, and I'd be there standing, and it was the most awful thing I'd ever done in my life. Sober, stark raving sober, but the last one I remember being in a tux and dancing my ass off and having a blast at it, so something changed during that time period. But anyway, the book talks about, you know, it asks us to say what we were like, not what it was like, what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. And a little on my family, I grew up in a family with a mom and dad that loved me dearly. They gave me everything I wanted. I went to a private high school. I have a college degree. I have a master's degree. I don't know if y'all are that impressed with that. I was so stoned when I got it. I don't know, but I got it nonetheless. And I tell you that because I'm well educated, but I couldn't stay sober for a long time. I grew up in a private high school. I went to a SEC school, and I started out drinking at an early age, and it was because I wanted to be accepted by the people that I perceived to be cooler than me, and I wanted to be accepted, and that was a way in, and I became very good at it, and I started to do drugs at a very young age, at, you know, 10th or 9th or 10th grade. I thought that was a young age. Today it gets a lot younger than that, but, you know, did all the drugs you could think of, did all the substances, did all the behaviors, but what I was like was, I knew I heard a guy say this once, and it made so much sense to me. I knew the price of everything, but the value of nothing. That's what kind of guy I was. My dad put it very eloquently. He said, "Jody, you're like a seagull. You come in and shit all over everything, then you leave." And that's what kind of guy I was. Another friend of mine would say, "Jody, you got your shit together, but you don't seem to know how to lift it." And, you know, I ran around a lot of years, and I changed geographies. I went from Alabama. I live in Montgomery, Alabama now with my family, but I went from Montgomery to Lake Martin to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to Portland, Oregon, to Montana, to Asheville, North Carolina, to Atlanta here, and then ended up back in Montgomery. And, you know, the one thing I learned, wherever I went, there I was. I couldn't get away from me. And so, you know, I remember experiences of waking up in the with EMTs over me, you know, I had a seizure because I was coming off benzos, and I mean, stuff like that happened that I'm sure a lot of y'all have experienced. It's just that didn't stop me from using, didn't stop me from the behaviors, I was 32 years old by when it came to the end, and I was living in Asheville, North Carolina. I was wearing a suit every day to work. I was working for a Swiss bank, one of the largest banks in the world. I was in the top three in my training class in all the country, making a lot of money. And I was dying on the inside. And I tell you that because I thought you had to be living under a bridge, and I thought you had to be absolutely destitute to be an alcoholic. I thought you to be a drug addict. I guess for years I bragged on being a functioning addict. I thought that was pretty cool. But I didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. But it came to the end of my rope. I was in Asheville. I was doing really, really well on the outside. Had a car, had a home, had a family, but my mom and dad still, who still spoke to me. And I was in a really bad incident. Mary Jean talked about this with me earlier today, but I went, the bottom for me was I went to tell my parents that it was, the junk had me, and it had me by the throat, and I couldn't stop it. And I was ready to tell them. I was disgusted with my life, and it was nothing on the outside. I'm telling you, man, everything on the outside looked fine. You know, unless you spent time with me, you'd know I was an idiot. But it was an inside thing. It was just I was disgusted, and I remember having a really bad fever at the end. And I remember by that time I was taking morphine sulfate, and my dealer, my coke dealer, was giving me morphine sulfate, and I made a smoothie with morphine sulfate because I had the flu, and you don't need sharp objects around if you're taking morphine sulfate because you don't know you cut yourself. And I mean, it's like, it was just absolute, disgusting. And now that I look back on it, I mean, that was during one work day. And so it was, it was just enough. And so I go see my parents at Lake Martin, and I sit them down and I said, you know, the cocaine and pills have got me. They got me and I can't stop. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm either going to go to treatment or I'm going to go to AA. I had been seeing a counselor about 30 miles outside of Asheville because I didn't want anybody to know that I had a problem. And I would go pay her $50 an hour to sit there and go, have you ever gone to NA or AA? And we would sit around and do a bunch of kumbaya stuff. And but she kept just coming. The end result was, have you been to a 12-step program? Have you done that? And I was like, well, no, but I may know somebody. And it's funny how we're the last ones to find out we're alcoholic. And so I go sit my parents down, and it was enough. And anyway, my parents were like, they were kind of relieved. They'd known it for years. Hell, I'd heard them for so long. They'd found my drugs for so long. And Dad said there's two kinds of love in this world. And there's Socratic love, which I still don't know what that is today. And which I think is, he said, if you murder somebody, I'm still going to love you. And I think is the way he put it. And he said, then there's tough love. And if you don't change within the next 30 days, you're out of the family. And I really didn't care that he even told me that. He got my attention, but I mean, I was like, that's the least of my freaking worries right now. You know, I got problems. I got real problems. And not only did I know it was the drugs and alcohol, I'd come to terms with that, but this is the other thing that I could not deny, was that there was 15 wonderful women that I dated probably in my life, and every one of those relationships I had run her off because of the junk. And I couldn't deny that. There was no way around it. It was the truth. And so that, in addition to the fact that the stuff was making my life so unmanageable, that was undeniable. And that was when it really was the bottoming out, the absolute moment of clarity. And so I go back to Asheville and I start going to AA meetings, and I stop drinking, and I have bottles full of Klonopin. And that really works well for a while. And until you find out that you're not supposed to take drugs, and you just can't, well, you can take all the drugs you want to and go to AA, but it just, you can't, you're not going to get sober. And I got to a really bad physical bottom. In about 60 days after I'd gone to my first AA meeting, and I'd been going to AA and stuff in Asheville, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. I'd lost a ton of weight, and it scared the crap out of me physically. But this is how sick I was. I used that as an excuse to get more benzos, more Xanax, more Klonopin, all that stuff. I mean, because I had to deal with it. You know, it was a big deal. I had to use needles now and all that stuff. And so anyway, about another month after that, I had gotten into a whirlwind with a girl I was dating. I had no business dating. And she'd sit there and do drugs with me all night and go, man, you got a problem. You need to stop. And she'd be doing drugs with me. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. You know, if you loved me, you wouldn't do it with me. But she was so not there. And nor was I, but I heard her because she would go to sleep and she'd wake up and I'd be staring at the ceiling with a mirror of coke under the bed and all that stuff. And it was like, I just couldn't stop. She was like, well, you're just not even yourself. Why are you doing this to yourself? And I was like, just because I feel so good. I couldn't laugh. I couldn't perform. I couldn't do any of that stuff. I was absolutely impotent. I mean, it was just ridiculous. But I was in a whirlwind with her, and it just exploded. And I realized the fact that, man, I got not only an alcohol problem, I got a major drug problem. And and I need to get sober. And that's when the whole circumstances begun to get me here to Ridgeview to get introduced to the alumni here in the aftercare group. I got a sponsor, a guy that had grown up on the same street as me, and he had gone through Ridgeview and had been at one time part of the alumni and knew about it and knew Sam. And so I weaned myself, picked up my last white chip at Triangle Club, and started going to meetings every day and just going to meetings. And listen to this, drug addicts, and listen to this, people that don't suffer from alcoholism or from alcohol. This is very important. I've learned this in my recovery that I was sitting in AA meetings, a serious drug user and alcohol user, but my ego will look for any way it can not to be like you. I mean, my ism will separate me constantly from you. That's what our ism does to us. It's I, self, and me. It's constantly separating myself from being in the we. And so I'm sitting down at Triangle Club in AA meetings going, man, these people are talking about alcohol. And I'm, screw alcohol, I like drugs. And I was looking for a back door any way I could to get the hell out of there. And my ego was doing that. I didn't know it at the time. And I was talking, thank God I was talking to my sponsor about this. And he said, I want to introduce you. You need to go get involved in the aftercare and get involved at Ridgeview. And he got me in touch with Sam. He told me to call Sam. I called him. And Sam said, you can come out here and be a part of this. We've got conditions. These are what they are. You relapse, I don't know how many times. I think three times. You know, you're out. Or I don't even know if you give me that many times. And he didn't say you leave the women alone, but the other ones did. And he said, he said, you can come be a part of this. You come out here, but this is serious stuff. And if you're not serious about it, we'll throw your ass out of here. Period. End of sentence. And I came out to aftercare, and it was awful. I sat down at the end of the row, and I really didn't want to be there, but I did want to be there. It was weird. I mean, I was like ready. I was like, it was weird. But I just my feet were putting me there, and they had orientation. And I remember that I went back there, and Jeff, I think you might have been in it. I can't remember, or Danny, I can't remember, one of you two. And out here, and as you know, they keep a lot of statistics on stuff, and they were sort of introducing me to it, whatever else, and they said, look, we've kept records of this. We know that if you do what we do in the alumni, you get involved with it, you come to aftercare, you do what we do, you stay with the core group, there's a 92% chance that you will stay sober. And that's when it really blew my mind, because I was like, shit, all I got to do is come and I can make an A. I don't even have to, you know. And, you know, I mean, my mind was probably like, well, I can cheat and I can still make an A. But you know, the funny thing about recovery is it's not like school. You can't cheat. You can cheat, but it's going to really hurt. And that's the thing about recovery. It's not like what we think of learning as, you know, I mean, I went to college, and so you hear somebody lecture you information, and you regurgitate it on a test on Friday, and I cheated. So it was that was a great way to get through school. But the problem with recovery is that you can cheat your ass off. You can know the book inside and out, and you can quote it eloquently, but you can drink your ass off. It doesn't do shit for recovery. End of sentence. And that's what they talk about. Half measures avail us nothing. That's what they talk about. I mean, it just doesn't fucking work. I haven't seen it work. And I haven't seen anybody's alcoholism be medicated away either. You know, I think they can give us a lot of medication, and I've seen it through a lot of guys I sponsor, and I don't think you can medicate away. This time it's going to be different when we go back to the alcohol. I don't know. Maybe I could be real wrong about that, but in my experience, I just haven't really seen that. But in addition to aftercare, I also got an. I mean, listen to me. I got an addictionologist out here. I went and saw a professional. I really dug the man too because he carried a chip in AA and he's multiples of decades of sober. And I really, really dug that about him and would listen to him. And he gave me some things that helped get my mind right a little bit, but it didn't do crap about keeping me away from a drink. I had to put my feet in recovery. I had to put my feet out here. I had to put my feet in places they didn't want to be if I wanted to stay sober. And so I started on the path, and I was going to Triangle Club all the time, but I was coming out here every Thursday, and I was part of the alumni group. And they started to tell me that if you want what we have, you'll do what we do. And I remember asking Mary Jean, when do I feel better? And she said, well, what step are you on? And I said, well, four step. And she said, well, how about do it? And okay, well, how's that going to make me feel better? You know, and she's like, do it. Just stop talking. And I would come up here on Saturdays, that Serenity Garden out there in the a lot of the areas of this complex. I mean, I've helped dig dirt and build and got muddy with all these guys on Saturday morning because that's what they said to do and that's what they were doing. But you know, when I figured out and I started to recognize that they weren't drinking and they weren't doing drugs. You know, and they were talking about it, and they were talking about how they, you know, half of them carried guns. I thought that was cool as shit. I was, like, really enamored by that, and they shot dope, and they, you know, I mean, I really thought that was cool. But they were happy, and they were content, they were just at peace, you know, and I wanted that so bad. And I have in my book written, I don't know where I heard it, I think it was at a Big Book study, but it says, you know, when the alcohol ends, the malady begins. And you know, the problem, the hard part for us is when we stop doing the dope and the alcohol and we get away from treatment, you know, then you're going to experience sobriety, and that sucks. I mean, if you have alcoholism, it's not fun. And that's why we need... she's talking about how happy I am and excited and all this stuff, because if I'm not excited and not happy about my sobriety, I'm not going to stay that way. I mean, I'm just not. And you people showed me how to a manner of living, as it talks about, that was just... wonderful. So I start walking this path, and I had a sponsor my first year that stayed sober on me. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know, you don't know what you don't know. I was going to AA meetings all the time. He wasn't going with me or wouldn't go with me, and I was talking to him, but the one thing I did was I called him every day of my life, and I said, the one thing I did when he came in here, I said, I'll do whatever you tell me to do for 1 year of my life. If it's not better after 1 year, I'm going back to the way it was. And that was it. And I called him every day, and he introduced me to Ridgeview, and that was the most wonderful thing that came out of that relationship, because it absolutely saved my life. Because had I just stayed in AA, I probably would have gone back out. I was too much of a drug addict, and it's so hard sitting in AA, listening to people talk about drinking alcohol when that doesn't really turn me on. And so I tell you all that because if you have the opportunity to be part of aftercare out here and part of the alumni and stuff, grab hold of that shit. If y'all want to be happy about recovery, do it. But I started on the path with a sponsor that did. He had experience up to the ninth step, and that was all the experience he had. So I got to the ninth step work, and he didn't have experience to get me past it. And so I was stuck. I was like, I mean, actually, it was wonderful because I didn't want to do the ninth step amends. But I started to see at AA meetings and these people, and they were meeting with their sponsors, and they were doing all this stuff and going through the book, and I wasn't experiencing that. And I brought it up in aftercare, and I said, my sponsor doesn't go to AA meetings. And they got all over my ass and said, "Do you need a new sponsor?" And I had the biggest. And again, when the alcohol ends, the malady begins. So I started managing my life without alcohol and drugs, and that's not good for me. And I'm in a fast-paced industry in sales and a money business, and where if you make a big mistake, it can cost a lot of money, and you can get out of the business in a New York minute. They'll put your butt in jail or prison if you mess up. And so I'd gotten myself into a pretty big issue with another employee, whatever else. And I'd noticed this guy at Triangle Club that I really dug. And he was, well, actually, I didn't recognize him. Somebody, one of my friends said, "You need to call so-and-so because he's in the same business you're in. And he might be able to help you. He helps a lot of guys, blah, blah, blah." And so I called him and met him for breakfast one morning and just unloaded on him on all this problem I'd created at work. And, "Oh, my God, what do I do? Blah, 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 blah." And he just listened. And he just sat there with these awake eyes and just listened. And I just unloaded on him. I don't know what it was. It's just like this sense. You know, people that are really sober in here, man. It's like I'm so attracted to their spirit. I know what that is today. I'm really attracted to their spirit, and I really want what they have. And so he continued to help me when he didn't know my last name. He didn't know my parents. He didn't know where I went to see. He didn't give a shit. He was saving his own ass is what he was doing. But we kept meeting and whatever else. And so eventually I asked him to be my sponsor, and he was a little different from this first one. He gave me instructions immediately and said, "You're going to do this work or you're going to find a new sponsor. And you'll have your four-step done within a month. You'll blah, 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 blah." And I said, "Okay." And I think out of fear of not being accepted or part of, I did it harder than anything because... you know, that just affects my pride and ego, which is like, I really want to be a part of. I really want you to like me. I really, you know, that's, I think, a natural human emotion probably for us. But it's where ours is like with Miracle-Gro on it. It's so intense. And so I started on this path of doing the work. I'd already done kind of the work, but I started doing it with him. And we had the fifth step, and he had candles, and he had a punching bag at his house, and all this stuff. He goes, "I like when I do my four step, I like to beat this punching bag." And I'm like, "Shit, really?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's good for you." and so we sit down on the fifth step, and I start going through it with him and all this stuff, and he's not very nice about it. He starts talking about all the shame and the guilt and what a dirtbag I was and all this stuff. But the thing he did do was he shared how he was the same way. And he shared all these situations where actually he was about 10 times worse probably than a lot of stuff I did. But it was, or at least it perceived it that way. And he was doing that out of love. I know that now. I know that today because I do that with my own guys. He taught me how it was supposed to be done, and I felt like I wanted to throw up after it. But I understood what he was doing. He made me see what an asshole I was, and how I mistreated women. Not so much physically, but just mentally and emotionally. And I was just—it was all about me, Then we go. Then I'm in six and seven. I think it was the time we went to the beach down in on the Georgia coast, and I'm going, "Well, how do you do six and seven?" They're like, "Read the book, and you know, just meditate and be present and all this stuff." And it just was like gibberish to me. But he didn't let me spend much time there because he had me in my eighth step work, and then he got me onto the ninth step. And nothing got me closer to God of my understanding than the ninth step. I love this step today, and I feared it more than anything in the world. It made me want to throw up. But there's some amazing amends that happened for me, and some amazing things that happened, and I had a great big list of a lot of dads of girls I dated that I had hurt their daughter or I had stolen their drugs. I'll go through a few of the men's because they're really important. One of them was a girl I dated in college, and the reason I'm in the industry I'm in is because of this man. He was just an amazing guy and started a firm in Birmingham and very well respected. He was a running back on the early 60s Bear Bryant teams at Alabama and won national championships with Leroy Jordan, who played at Dallas Cowboys, and all these guys. This guy's a stud. I mean, everybody loved him. Everybody loved all those guys. They were very highly regarded in Alabama and still are. I studied finance because of him because I didn't know what else I was going to do. I was dating his daughter, and I thought he was so cool, and he did really well. It seemed, and he was in the business I'm in, so I got into finance. I was good with numbers. I got a master's in finance because really him. But when I dated his daughter, we used to stay at their house in Birmingham, and I used to go through his medicine cabinet and steal his pills, I think I stole all of them. I mean, eventually, but I knew I'd done it, and that had to be on my mind. I harmed him. I knew I'd harmed him. I couldn't deny that. You know, by this time I had moved to Atlanta with my business. I had accomplished what I wanted to do in life. I had a big corner office and a Buckhead office. And I'm sitting up there in the Buckhead office in the corner of it, and I've got these men's laying in front of me. And I call Dean on the phone, and I'm like, I'm not doing this. This is ridiculous. I don't think this is a good idea. I want to kind of throw up, I think. He said, I said, maybe I'll just pray. And he said some very horrible words to me and said, I think he used motherfucker, maybe. Excuse my language. And he said, Father Jody, oh, you're so fucking spiritual, God. If you don't make these amends, you do not call me back until you make these amends. And if you don't make the amends, you're going to find a new sponsor. I don't give a shit. And that got my attention. And so I started making these. I actually dialed the number on the phone, and it's like, if any of you made them, it's very surreal. It's almost like an out of body experience because you're like, I really shouldn't be doing this. I mean, God, this is a bad idea. And so I call, and this guy's name's Billy, and I call him on the phone, and Billy, oh, blah, 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 we BS, we're in the same business, all that stuff. And Billy, I got to come clean with you about something. I never told you this, but when I used to stay at your house, I used to steal your pills and your painkillers, and I feel like I really harmed you, and I just wanted you to know that. And if there's anything I can do to make it right, please let me know. And he said, man, Jody, he goes, I don't think I could have done what you just did. And I was like, really? And he goes, my so-and-so, I think it was a sister-in-law or something, had a problem with alcohol, and she had a lot of trouble. And Jody, I just admire you for so much for what you just did, and that takes so much courage. I just can't imagine. And I'm just like, holy shit, they're right. This is not what I expected. And so I kept plowing through this list, and I'm sitting up in my big corner office in Buckhead, and I'd gotten through like 10 of them, and man, I start sobbing uncontrollably. These emotions and feelings, and I don't know, shame, guilt. Oh my God, it was like I mean, it's like a pressure valve came off of a gas pipe or something, and these emotions come out, and I start sobbing uncontrollably, like I thought I was losing my freaking mind, and the only thing I knew to do was drive to Ridgeview. I mean, I'll go see Sam. I don't know what to do. I know they'll take care of me. I just knew that, and that was good enough for me. And so I'm driving down West Basis Ferry in my car and sobbing uncontrollably. And I'm calling Dean on the phone going, this is what's happening to me. I'm losing my mind. Am I going crazy and everything else? And he's on the other line going, this is awesome. This is what's supposed to be happening. And I'm like, you're fucking crazy. You know, I'm like, you're crazy. There's no way. Am I going to be in an insane asylum? And I'm driving to Ridgeview, and I'm snot's coming, it's tears. I've never cried like that in my life. And I get out to Ridgeview, and I pull up out here, and it happened. And it was like warm water was poured over me, and the promises came true. And it was like the experience of what we read in the Nine Step Promises made sense. Like they had never made sense before. And it was like all of a sudden I was in it. I mean, it was the fourth dimension of existence. I can't put it any other way. And the only way I can talk about it is because I've experienced it. And it absolutely, everything just stopped. It was like, it was just amazing. And y'all were right. And y'all were right. And I was wrong. Once again, and then I was on to something, and I knew there was a God of my understanding that I could not deny. There was, it really takes a trust or something and some hope or some power to walk through amends, because that's tough stuff, isn't it? I mean, it's tough, and it, you know, our job's to show up, and God will do the rest, you know. And so I had another amends to make, and there's a guy that is a client of mine now, and I used to work for this company when I got out of graduate school, and he's a really, really big deal in Alabama, and he's a extremely wealthy man, and I used to work for his company, When I used to work for his company, I hated the boss so bad that I used to lie about my mileage because I just wanted to, I just hated the boss. So I wanted to, and I was using a lot of cocaine, so cash was good. So it was, but I knew I was stealing, and I knew it, and it was so much shame and guilt tied to that, man. And that was a big amends, and so this guy controls like Central Alabama. He's so powerful guy, and I had an account with him and all this stuff. But this guy's so big, he's got people running his money for him. He doesn't deal with it, and so I never call him. And so I was actually here in Atlanta, so. My sponsor said, you need to get it done. Call him. Get it done. So I call him. Hey, how you doing? You know, and I called him, and it was an out-of-body experience. And so I call him, and hey, how you doing? what are you up to today? And, you know, he's like, hey, it's good to hear from you. And how's your wife? And I was like, I got to come clean with you about something. I'm trying to live a better life today, and when I used to work for you, I used to steal from you, and I owe you some money. I think it's about $1,000, I think, and I'd like to send you a check. And he chuckles and goes, dude, I don't need any money. And I said, well, I know you have your own charity, and I'd like to send the money anonymously to your charity in your honor. And he said, well, that'd be all right if you'd like to do that. And so I did it. And he goes, well, you, he goes, Jody, I appreciate you doing that, but you know you got to go tell, I'll use his name, Joe. You got to go tell Joe, who's the guy who runs all his stuff and president of his company and was in charge of me when I used to work for him. And so I had another business opportunity where I was back over there, and I was in person with Joe, the president of the company, and I'm meeting with him, and we meet, and we have business to talk about, and I'm talking business with him the whole time. And in the meeting, I said, you know, Joe, I gotta tell you something. I've already talked to Mr. Big, and I used to steal from you when I worked here, and I'm trying to live a better life, and I owe you some money, and I've sent it to the charity and anonymously, and you know, in his honor, and I feel like I've taken care of it, but I'll be happy to do whatever you think's right. And I just wanted you to know that I was wrong. And he said, Jody, you know, we don't think less of you for what you did, but we think more of you for what you just did. And I was like, holy shit, you know, like, this is, and it was like I walked out of there like a feather. I mean, it was like, it absolutely made no intellectual sense. And I mean, this spirituality makes no intellectual sense. I mean, you try to intellectualize this thing, you will kill yourself. And it's, it makes no sense. But you know, the thing is, I did the action. I stole from him. I can't deny that. It happened. And if I want to be free, and my spirit wants to be free, and I want to live right, and I want to be free of that, I've got to own up to it. And then I learned that this thing was all about growing up. It was all about becoming a man. It was all about owning up to my past behavior. And they probably knew I stole. They probably knew I was an idiot. It's not hard to figure out, you know. But the coolest part of it was they saw that I knew it, and that was just an amazing experience. So then I got into after the ninth step. I'm going to tell one more men's because I think it's really important and it's really good. This happened in sobriety. And in my business, it's a very greedy, ego-driven business. And it's there's a lot of money at stake a lot of times. And I had a resentment towards a guy that I felt had slighted me in the business. He was in the same company as me. And we're trying to work with this family's money, and he had a lot more of their money than I did, and they told me to go to the wayside and sorry kid, you need to wait your turn. And this guy, and so anyway, he was a very scary dude, and a very very powerful guy, was much more successful financially than me, so of course I judge him by that and think that I'm some weakling because of it. And I learned a valuable, this was an amazing experience. And so I hated him. And the book tells us that if we hate people or we resent them, that we trash them, that we probably need to make amends to them. And I did that. And so I owed him an amends. And I hated this guy so bad that I would avoid the building he worked in Buckhead because I was afraid of seeing it. And that's what my fear and my anger, my resentment, my fear, my shame, my guilt did to me for years. It directed my actions. And here you taught me to take action irrespective of that stuff. And you told me how to make it right. So therefore, I don't have to walk around and avoid buildings anymore. And I hated this guy so bad that his brother came into the Triangle Club and started getting sober. And I hated this guy so bad that his brother looked like him, so I hated his brother too. And so I feel like I'd harmed him, and I had to make amends to him. So I called him to meet me, and I met him at the bar downstairs at the building he worked in. Well, let me preface this. Before that, I really hated his guts, and I was on a I was working with another group, and through a series of circumstances, I'm sitting on a ski lift one day, and I'm in Salt Lake City, or in, I guess in Park City, and we're going up a ski lift with this guy that I worked with in my office, but he lived out there now, and we're talking, and he starts talking about these two brothers. And he starts talking and trashing them about how one of the brothers, the guy that I hate too, had stolen money from him. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. And this guy was spitting venom about him. And he goes, you know, I grew up with them, you know. And I used to watch their dad, who's an alcoholic, beat the shit out of both of them. And he used to beat the shit out of them all the time and come home. And he was just an angry drunk. And it was like a postcard from God that goes, Jody, you don't know shit. Love God. And it taught me that, you know what? That guy's driven by the same fear and anger that I'm driven by. And who the fuck am I to judge him? And it all made sense. And then all of a sudden, I remember somebody in my head go, you're supposed to be of service now. You're supposed to be helpful. How can you be useful? Okay, all of a sudden the amends made sense. And all of a sudden, what if I tell this guy that I'm an example of Alcoholics Anonymous and it tells me I'm never going to get over drinking if I don't make this amends. I don't like to sin more than you do, man, but I've been trashing your name. And so I go see him and we sit at this bar and I said, man, I need to talk to you alone. He brought his partner down because he thought I wanted to do business with him or something. And he got to leave, and I said, man, I just want you to know that I'm sober in AA, and I just saw your brother pick up a year chip, and I really hated you, and I hated you because you were more successful than me. I hated you because I thought you took stuff from me, and I just wanted you to know that I was wrong, and I want you to know that I'm doing it because I want to stay sober. And I don't want to die from drinking. I don't want to die from doing dope. And I did that a long time, and I don't want to live that way anymore. And he goes, you know what? I've thought about going to an AA meeting. And my brother has tried to get me to go and everything else. And I said, well, man, if you ever want to go, just let me know. And you know what I saw? I saw him for what he really was. He's just a scared, frightened, who knows if he's an alcoholic or not. But I'll tell you what, I didn't grow up with a dad that beat my ass all the time, but I know a lot of you have. And I sponsor a lot of men that have. And I can't fathom the depths of that pain and anger. I can't. But I sure know what to do about the anger. I mean, the steps have taught me that. But I have no idea what that's like. And I can't fathom how awful that is. But I can sure bet that I would be angry as he would be and act like he would act if I didn't have a 12-step program. I mean, that's kind of the guy I was. And so those are a few of the amends I made. And it were amazing experiences. And only one amends, the worst experience I had with, was the guy said thank you and hung up. That was the worst experience I had with an amends. So I was really wrong about that. The book told me that too. I just wish I'd read it. But my sponsor got me right into the 10th, 11th, and 12th step, and he said, Jody, you're not... He said, Jody, you need to have as many sponsees as days in the week. End of sentence. And I started sponsoring guys, and I hope I didn't kill anybody, but I did the best I could with what I knew how to do. And the best thing that we have is a book with directions in it, so I don't have to know anything. All I got to do is do. I saw a guy at a big book study or a conference I was at. He held up the book, and he goes, this will not keep you sober. He goes, the actions, if you take the actions outlined in this book, they will keep you sober. And I try to live those actions today. And the 11th step, prayer and meditation, the quiet time in the morning is crucial to my mind being right, and I don't always get to it. You know, when I got here, I was incapable of keeping a girlfriend. I ran every one of them off today through a lot of work in my sex inventory and through a lot of work with other sponsees learning about how to have a real relationship with somebody. I've learned a lot about being a, or try to be a good partner to my wife. I'm married today, have a son that's, he has a his 4-year birthday's in the morning. I can't wait to be there for him. God willing, he'll never see me drunk. Shit, he won't tomorrow, I know that, or tonight. I get to be present. I get to experience the whole miracle. My wife's really pregnant right now, about to have another boy. And in July, I mean, that's a fascinating thing to go through a woman with. Y'all are amazing and much tougher than we are. You know, there's so many experiences I get to have today and so many, you know, my career. I mean, I just so many things I could talk about that are, I mean, all the direct result of Ridgeview and Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm part of the happy hour group in Montgomery. We meet 6:30 a.m. in the morning, at noon, and at 6 p.m. If you're ever in Montgomery, Alabama, please come to the happy hour group and see us. I try to be there a lot. Some of my sponsees drove over here with me tonight, some really good friends of mine from Montgomery, some Dean who sponsored me, all these. I mean, this is like my family. And they absolutely loved me when I could not love myself. They absolutely said, Jody, it's going to be all right. And I remember Mickey looking over one time at me at a men's meeting, and I'm just freaking out, and I'm 2 years sober, and it was just like I was vibrating. And he said, and he punched his throat, and he goes, Jody, it's just like a buzzsaw. Early sobriety is just like a buzzsaw. And I was just like, okay. yes, sir. But I know what he meant by that. It was just really raw and really tough at first, you know. But it's a great way of life today. And I'm eternally grateful to Ridgeview and my friends here. And thanks for letting me share.
Jody, thanks. We call that good stuff. Appreciate it.